The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
Brought to you by Standard Life. Retirement specialists getting you ready for your second life.
I'm joined by author and journalist Carl Kinsella to talk about his new book, At Least It Looks Good From Space, a catalogue of modern, millennial and personal catastrophes. And you may know Carl from his journalistic work. You may know him from Twitter, or the artist formerly known as Twitter, and including his regular comments at the Journal. Or you might know him from that time that he convinced the internet that the Lewis was free. Yes, that is him. And I'm delighted Carl is joining us in studio. Listen, thanks a minute for coming in. So the book is... it's not like an autobiography. It's kind of a series of stories that are vaguely autobiographical but have another point to them. Is that a fair assumption, a fair summary?
It's like the more I talk about the book, the harder to categorize it becomes. I feel like with each interview I do, I'm like, oh, maybe it's not. So it's definitely got elements of memoir in that these are essays and stories that are rooted in, to some degree, in like observations from my life or stories about like funny things that have happened to me. You know, you take like a case in point as like the Lewis is free sort of story. Like, that's obviously an interesting thing that happened to me in my life. But there are also like kind of broader social implications when you think about the nature of how things can spread so quickly on the internet, or even like a commentary to some degree on Irish public transport infrastructure. You know, so it's very easy to sort of, or not that it's easy, but I suppose the sort of approach I took with the book was to take something that I found sort of amusing or poignant or interesting from my life and sort of seeing what sort of like more universal ideas I could extrapolate from that and like try to render them in some way relevant to someone who might read it. And that's sort of what it is. So it is, it's segments and stories from my life, but I suppose built out to sort of make a broader point about millennialism or what it's like to live your life online or the intersection of onlineness and Irishness. So that's sort of, I mean, I don't really know if that gives anyone an idea of what's in the book, but that's what the book is.
And did you find, because I, like a lot of people, know you from Twitter initially, and we were only saying just beforehand, I feel like I've met you before, but we've never actually met in person. Did you find going from that and what used to be the great days of Twitter when you had 140 characters and you were sort of putting out these very smart and funny things to compiling that into something that, like a book, was that a difficult journey on your journalistic career?
Yeah, I think maybe on a craft level it's quite difficult, because maybe to some degree there was a level of hubris of like, oh well, I'm good at writing tweets, so I should also be able to write a book.
But book's, of course, just a series of 140 characters lashed together.
It's sort of writing the connective tissue between the 140 character observations. That's the challenge. But like, I definitely think my time spent on Twitter probably was helpful, you know, in terms of writing in such a way that you get to sort of know your audience and you get to know what sort of observations resonate with people. And I think in many ways, it's almost like a really organic focus group. And I think that that's what Twitter was for me for such a long time. Like, not just that, but it is a way of, I think, or it was a way of better understanding people and sort of getting to the heart of what resonates with people about Irish culture. So I think that very much like informed the way I wrote the book. But of course, like, writing the book did coincide with the pretty much total collapse of Twitter. Mm. Like, I've pretty much been off Twitter since last December, which, as I say, was pretty much the same timeline in which I was writing the book. So basically, I took all the creative effort that I was giving Twitter for free and instead, you know, repurposed it for something that actually has been useful.
Could actually make you a bit of cash at the end of the day. Yeah. Big money spinner cash, yeah, or books,
totally,
of course,
books
at the moment.
It's a lucrative industry.
Yeah. Have you found that weird? Because, you know, I like that. Used to be on Twitter an awful lot, probably a similar timeline to you, haven't been on it in ages since Elon took it over and made it a wasteland. But then finding another outlet for that creative expression, because taking those little sharp and social comments, being on politics or whatever else, actually putting them into another medium, be it Instagram or wherever, is quite difficult. It doesn't have the same resonance, I don't feel, as what Twitter used to have as a, you know, like, take lately Toy Show Night, even as an event on Twitter. There used to be these certain nights of the year that you were like, oh, that's an Irish people of a certain age coming together, and that doesn't really exist anymore.
No, it doesn't. And I think, you know, on that level, it is such a shame, because I think what the joy of Twitter was is that it was like a real ecosystem and that people did interact in a certain way that it was sort of reminiscent of maybe like other systems, like maybe like a secondary school or like a workplace, where like people develop their own identities and they relate to each other in a certain way. And I think that was, you know, at times a very nice feeling, and it definitely gave people the opportunity to, you know, sort of layer their own experiences on top of other people's experiences. And I think you learn so much more about the world around you in that way. But of course, like, the downside to these digital platforms, and it has only become more and more prevalent, the more concentrated it becomes, and the fewer platforms there are, and the more power the sort of CEOs and owners of these platforms have, is that they become less of a sort of a natural ecosystem where people are discussing things in, you know, a back and forth kind of way, and it's much more algorithmically dictated now. So it's sort of like, you know, if you're talking about Elon Musk or Mark Zuckerberg, they have their thumb on the scale to some degree. Mm. So it's much less interesting now to spend your time on Twitter or on TikTok or any kind of social media. And actually, in the book, I kind of suggest that we should probably replace the phrase social media with algorithmic media, because there's very little about it that's social anymore. Like, if you remember Facebook, you know, 10 years ago, it was used to organize events. It was used to, you know, keep track of whose birthday was when. Obviously, you'd put up photographs, etc. Whereas now, nobody uses Facebook for those purposes anymore. Like, anyone who's using Facebook is on there. They're just subjected to whatever is on their newsfeed, which in many cases could be disinformation or, you know, really kind of crappy AI sort of content. So, you know, there's very little about Facebook that's geared towards bringing people together now. It's really just more about forcing content onto you.
Something you talk about as well is male friendships, and in particular male WhatsApp groups, which I'm kind of interested in, because we were talking yesterday, we had a piece on this about women giving out about men, and I suppose not seeing men as valuable in the 21st century. And some of our production staff were saying, oh, men get a hard time. And then I read some of the stuff that is sent in all male WhatsApp groups that you discussed, and I think, well, maybe men are getting a hard time for a reason.
Yeah, and this, well, I mean, first and foremost, yeah, I think, unfortunately, we do live in a society where men from a young age, certainly men who are my age, I think when we were younger, are sort of socialized to prize a lot of the wrong things. Whether that's sort of the kind of power or strength that you can have over other people, whether that's, you know, other fellow peers or men in your friend group, or whether it's women on a night out, that kind of thing. And I think that probably what we didn't get enough of was sort of an education in empathy. Mm. And so, like, I think, you know, in many ways, men are just... young men are susceptible, and they are sort of easily led by narratives that sort of tell them that exactly what they're doing is right, that their instincts are good. And I think that that's kind of it's a dangerous thing in some ways. Not to say that, you know, everyone has bad instincts by any means, but, you know, I think it's a dangerous thing when you're not getting enough of the encouragement to, for example, pursue creativity or to pursue sort of like more, I suppose, empathy-led lifestyle choices, in terms of, like, you know, a lot of men don't have, you know, female friends. I think that's quite a dangerous thing. And if you end up, I suppose, in sort of like an echo chamber where your feedback loop is that, you know, men are always getting a very hard time, and, you know, men aren't valued enough and aren't appreciated enough. And to be fair, this is a really complicated issue, because if you sort of zoom out and look at things on a sort of capitalistic level, the truth is that a lot of men are downtrodden, you know, in sort of financial ways or in economic ways. A lot of people don't have the prospects that they should. But as with all of these things, you get these talking heads who will, they will frame it as the problem being how men relate to women, you know, and saying that, oh, it's actually women who are letting you down. It's the fact that women don't support men the way they used to. These kind of nonsense narratives. And it's so regressive and so, you know, it's so harmful. But, you know, at the same time, there is a lot of hardship for men from the perspective of, like, I would say, economically.
Yeah.
So I think there's a lot of dissatisfaction. There's a lot of, you know, people are, I think, very despondent in many ways about the world we live in. And the issue is that there are people at the top who try to frame it as though they try to turn people against each other. They try to turn men against women. They try to turn, for example, you know, someone who's a citizen of a country against someone who's an immigrant to that country. I think all of those narratives are so... they're so off base, but we are, I think, as a people, very susceptible to them. Mm. I think that happens with gender. I think it happens with race. I think it happens in all those sort of circumstances. And I think it's the kind of thing that we do need more of an education in empathy and sort of just treating each other like people. And I think that could help us out, you know.
So the book, at least it looks good from space. Why the title?
Yeah, so the thesis behind the title, I suppose, is that if you were to zoom out, like, you know, if something's going horrible in your life and you're, you know, feeling pretty terrible about it all, if you imagine just zooming out by like 18,000 kilometers, it would all just look blue and green and, you know, orbital, and it would be very nice. So it's sort of like, the way I think of it is like, it's kind of like Hakuna Matata, but for people who have like already given up, you know, nihilistic Hakuna Matata.
That's a good way to put it. Millennial Hakuna Matata, yes, yeah, is just, you know, stick your head 18,000 kilometers out and pretend it's not happening. Yeah. But look, the book's available now in all, and sales going well by all accounts?
Yeah, the first week was a bestseller. So like, that's really cool. I mean, obviously sales, I think, are a challenge when it comes to books in Ireland. You know, it's not a huge market, but I mean, it's, I mean, I'm delighted with how it's going, I have to say.
Great. Well, look, it's a great read. Carl Kinsella, thanks so much, and fair play for getting all those 140 characters into whatever it is, 60,000 yeah, words in the end.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.